I'm Dan from Portland, Oregon.
I'm Kate from Minneapolis.
I'm Zach from Madison, Wisconsin.
The Sound of Young America is an independent production
supported by listeners like me.
If you'd like to donate to support the show,
visit MaximumFun.org.
And please click on Donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, it's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. We're here at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. My guest, Drake Jeremis, is the director of one of the films here in the festival. I want to say the name of the film, but I want to warn you that it may be offensive to some listeners. It refers to a feminine hygiene product, which is often associated with dudes who are jerks. And in fact, Dudes Who Are Jerks is one of the subjects of the film. It's a story about two brothers who don't get along very well, going on a bit of a quest in anticipation of one of the brothers' wedding. It's called Douchebag, and here's a clip from the film.
She's pretty cool, huh?
I didn't want to like her at first, but I have to say, I really like her.
She is amazing. She's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for her sake, let's just pretend to like each other. You know, to get through this. For the wedding, when we're around her, let's just pretend that we like each other. Underneath, we can hate each other. You can hate me. I'll be hating you too. But let's not let it show, all right?
I understand. I'm here. This is important.
And then after the wedding, we can go back to normal. All right?
Okay.
Drake Jeremis, welcome to The Sound of Young America.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. This is your second feature film, and that is almost distressingly impressive to me. And it's a very charming film as well. I read that your mother was one of the founding members of the Groundlings, the Los Angeles sketch and improv comedy group out of which many of the most famous comedians of the past 20, 25 years have come. Did you grow up in like sketch and improv comedy world?
Absolutely. That was my first taste of entertainment, you know, being around that. And she has an improv and sketch comedy group in Orange County. She has for the past 20 years. It's called the Orange County Crazies. And growing up in that world and that improv world was sort of my first experience with entertainment.
So. When did you start doing improv?
Oh, man, probably around 6 or 7. I mean, just sort of messing around a little bit and then started performing a little more frequently around 10, 11, 12, 13. And, you know, having my mom in that it was just amazing. Yeah, was
I read this article. I of course Googled you, and one of the things that popped up was this rather old article from the New York Times. I believe you were in high school when this article was written.
Oh wow!
It was an article I think about parenting, and there was a couple of paragraphs about you and your mom, and it described your mom having this office for the improv group and doing all the things that people who run improv theaters do, like, you know, doing corporate consulting and team building and all this different stuff. And you having your own office in the improv group's office where you were writing furiously. And it made me wonder what you were writing so furiously when you were, I guess, 17 years old.
I was doing plays at that time. I mean, that was, you know, I had the stage, I had the theater, so... Just doing plays. I mean, I did like 3 or 4, and it was a great experience to grow and learn, and it was incredible.
You were also, it mentioned in the article, had been performing in every one of the shows that the group was putting on. What were you doing in these shows?
Magic tricks and juggling. No, I was doing just improv and sketch comedy mostly. You know, that was what we were doing at the time.
Were you performing with a cast of all the other people were grown-ups?
Yeah, I was performing in a cast with, like, you know, people 30, 40 years older than me, and I think people were a little bit, you know, weirded out by it at first, but
was this like an improv context? In improv, often, anyone can be anyone, so did you find yourself playing the doctor alongside?
Absolutely. I would play, you know, female characters, you know, at 12. Probably because I had a high voice at that time, but it was, I mean, got to do everything and experiment and learn, and it was incredible.
How did doing all that sketch and improv shape who you became as a filmmaker?
God, that's an interesting question. I think it's something that's always in me when I'm making a movie. I think the idea that at any point you would feel or say anything is important, and Douchebag specifically, you know, the actors are encouraged to be reactive completely and to say and think and feel everything they think in the moment. And I think that having that background shaped a lot of how I make films.
Is it difficult to remember? I mean, one of the core principles of improvisation is, as you said, anything can happen at any time. And it's the responsibility of everyone on stage to support whatever happens to happen.
Exactly.
Which in the context of improv is vitally important, but in the context of creating a film can also cause problems in that, you know, films have to have a very specific structure in order to feel satisfying in the context of, you know, 90 minutes or 120 minutes. Was it difficult to learn that structure and pair that with that training that you'd have?
You know, I think the thing that I learned quickly after failing at doing it was the blocking of the performances had to stay the same. As long as you had that, you could improvise anything and everything would be continuous and the continuity would work and you could cut back and forth between things. So that's the key for me, is to keep to block the scene and keep it the same.
You were editing your first feature when the idea for this one came along. Your first feature, which competed and won a number of awards and festivals around the country. Editing is like this really intense thing, from what I can gather, with like a director and an editor sort of locked in a room for, you know, 12, 16-hour days staring at a monitor. Was that sort of how this bubbled up?
Absolutely. I mean, I spent 4 months in the room with Andrew Deckler, who's a fantastically accomplished editor. He edited Me and You and Everyone We Know. He was an editor on Borat. He just did Anvil last year. I mean, he's an incredibly accomplished guy and talented guy. And on top of that, extremely unique and funny. And the idea to put him in a movie and for him to act was something he never thought of doing ever in his life. And at first really didn't want to do it, but I convinced him to do it and he did it. And here he is.
So what were the actual qualities of this guy? This guy is one of the stars of the film. He is the titular douchebag.
He is douchebag.
I don't know if you pitched it to him as, you're a douchebag and I'd love to make a film about you.
Oh no, it was a little gentler than that.
What were the specific qualities of him that made you think, like, you know, making a movie is no small task, even a very, you know, technically modest film like this one? It involves, you know, 25 people and 6 months of their time. So what made you want to put all of that onto this guy who'd never actually done this before?
I've never met anyone in my entire life that sees the world like he does. He has an opinion about everything, but it's not an opinion that most people share. And
can you give me an example?
An example would be having a credit card, for instance. There's a scene in the film where he lectures his younger brother about having a credit card and having fiscal responsibility and participating in modern commerce, as he puts it. And we had that conversation that I don't have a credit card, and he just doesn't understand that and therefore has a lot of reasons for it.
he's also just a spectacularly distinctive looking
guy.
Yes,
that's the other thing that was important, was he has a beard that's about a foot off of his face, and he's sort of a balding guy and piercing brown eyes.
Very handsome guy, like a very charismatic, but also he's also bald, like mostly bald, but young for being mostly bald, and with this giant beard.
Yeah.
You must have just imagined looking at him through the camera.
Absolutely. I mean, he was a movie star, and I had to put him in the movie.
Yeah. Anytime I see a bald man with a beard, that's when I think
movie star.
Movie star.
Exactly.
So he has this quality of strong conviction. Did that suggest conflict to you?
Absolutely. I mean, the conflict that we would have, I mean, jokingly and in fun, was an idea that I thought if we could exaggerate that and create a brother relationship, then we'd have the basis for a movie and we'd have some conflict that we could grow from.
What was the appeal of a brother relationship? You don't have a brother, right?
I do, but we're not very close. He's much older than me, and we don't see each other that often, so no. But Ben Jones, who plays his brother in the movie, is sort of like my brother. We grew up together, and we've known each other for our whole lives, basically. So for some reason, that just kind of came together. I knew Andrew really well and knew Ben really well, and in my head, I thought, well, the two of them together is exactly the anti-chemistry that we're looking for the film.
It's sort of like you were almost sort of authoring a family for yourself.
Kind of in a way, yeah, definitely.
Describe your friend Ben, who's the other star of the film.
Ben is piercing blue eyes, beautiful blonde hair. No, he's
a very sweet looking guy.
Yes, exactly. Gentle man is how I would describe him. He can't grow a full beard. That was another thing that we thought of in the film, is that he's got patchy beard, and the idea is that he wants to grow a full beard like his brother but can't quite do it. So that's sort of a subtle character choice that we have of him. It's red as well. They both have red beards, and it's patchy. It's mostly under his chin that he has the beard.
So you have this central idea, which is there's a conflicted relationship between these two brothers. And that's a lovely idea, especially with these two lovely actors involved, but it's not quite a movie. So how did you get from that idea to the structure of the film?
You know, the structure of the film kind of came about when my fifth grade girlfriend was named Mary Barger, and in the film, the brothers go on a search to try to find Ben's younger, his fifth grade girlfriend, Mary Barger. And the idea that they were going to do that was sort of the framework of the road trip, and the conflict was sort of within that. So, I love Broken Flowers, and I love Woody Allen's work, and the sort of those themes, and the idea of going door to door trying to find this fifth grade girlfriend with these two brothers who hate each other. It's just a strange journey that they go on. So, hanging it on the fifth grade girlfriend was definitely a piece that I think early came together and became the movie.
How do you feel? I mean, this is a movie that's basically about two guys who are both coming to terms with their relationship with each other, but also coming to terms with, you know, what their relationship is to grown-up romance. Older jerky brother has this really great girlfriend that he's going to get married to, but feels horribly uncomfortable with that idea, and you know, still wants to bang around a little bit. And at the same time, the younger brother has never been in love except in fifth grade, and you know, is set off on this search for his fifth grade girlfriend. You're only 26, so like you could be in anywhere along this spectrum. Which parts of those did you relate to yourself?
You know, I personally, I'm hopelessly romantic, and I love the idea of being in love at one point and then revisiting that later in life. That idea to me is something that fascinates me. So,
have you ever given it a shot?
You know, Mary Barger was here opening night. She came. I haven't seen her in 15 years, and she was there.
How did you get in touch with her? Because
I found her on
you
Facebook.
Weren't even sure if she was going to be there.
No.
When you were standing on the stage introducing the film.
No, I was not, and she was there at the end, and I saw her for the first time in 15 years. She actually brought me a flask that said douchebag on it, so she was really excited to see me again. And
or she possibly thought you were a douchebag.
Yeah, probably that. It's probably that. But she's a really cool young lady, so it was good to reconnect with her through the film.
What was the message? You're looking horribly embarrassed. You're staring like with absolute conviction at the label on your tee. But I feel like I have to press this a little bit. What was the Facebook message that you sent her when you found her on Facebook?
Oh man, I was so nervous. I was nervous she was going to sue us or something. I said,
had you already made the film?
Already
and everyone
made the
uses
film.
Her name.
Yes, her name is probably probably in the film 80 times. And I was so nervous that she was going to be weirded out by that. But the message I sent her was just, hey, how are you doing first? Remember me? And she said, yeah, I do. And then I said, hey, I made this little movie, and I used your name in it and some of the details of our affair in fifth grade. And I'd love for you to see it and reconnect with you. And she said, that's amazing. And then about 4 weeks later, we were lucky enough to get into Sundance. And I said, hey, do you want to come up? They really would love for you to come and be a part of this. And she said yes, and she was here for opening night. So it was really cool.
Where does she live?
She lives in Orange County. She still lives in Orange County, where we went to fifth grade.
And I would imagine that you probably still live in Southern California.
I live in Los Angeles, yeah.
Okay, so you have the option of saying, hey, why don't I take you out to lunch first and prepare you for this whole thing? But you declined this option.
Definitely. I wanted her to see the movie first. I mean, it's kind of a love letter to her in a way. And a special thing for her to come. So
okay, Drake. So at the screening, you're taking questions from the audience, and someone asked you something about her, and it came up that you said, "Well, I don't know if she liked it." And there was like one lone clap from the back of this huge. It was screening in what appeared to be like a high school gymnasium with seats built into it. And you hear this lonely clap from the back. You must have had the chance to talk to her after the film. What was it like to talk to her?
I think she was touched. I think she was relieved that the Mary Barger in the film wasn't a bad person
Was she still cute?
Very cute. Very, very cute. And a sweetheart, absolute sweetheart. So it was really cool and special.
Well, Drake, thank you so much for taking this time to be on the
Sound of America. Thanks for having me.
It was great to have you. Drake Doremus is the director of the film Douchebag, which just premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah, as we record. You can find out more about the movie at douchebagmovie.com. And I was very impressed, Drake, to hear that you guys managed to nab twitter.com/douchebag.
We did. We were very lucky to get it.
You'd think maybe that Diddy would have grabbed that for backup or something. Thanks again, Drake.
Thanks for having me.
That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I have been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our editor in Chicago and the producer and director of our shows at Sundance is Nick White. Our videos were shot by Benjamin Harrison. And by the way, you can check out videos of all of these shows absolutely 100% for free and download them, even if you'd like to, at MaximumFun.org. That's MaximumFun.org. Our special thanks to Eric Bright, PR, for hosting us at the Sundance Film Festival. They're the ones who gave us the third floor bedroom to record in. If you have thoughts about the show, email me, Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, at MaximumFun.org. You can check out all our shows and download our free podcasts at MaximumFun.org, or just search for The Sound of Young America in iTunes. You know, we have an annual conference called Max FunCon. It's coming up in May, and we've just announced 2 totally full-ride scholarships for the con. So if you'd like to come but you haven't got the money, visit us at maxfuncon.com. That's maxfuncon.com to find out how to apply for one of those scholarships. We'll see you next time right here on The Sound of Young America.
Production of The Sound of Young America is underwritten in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com.